This is Icon Art Radio. I'm Bill Teeple, and I'm here with Alan Cobb and Donna Colby. We're the usual hosts. And we've invited back our guest, Jim Weidel, who's one of the featured artists in our show at Icon Gallery during the months of, where are we? June, July?
It started
in July, and it will end on September 5th. Come on down and see the realism that we have from across the state of Iowa. And Jim is one of our featured artists. You brought up in our last show a couple of titles, The Eclipse of Art by Julian Spalding, and The Art Instinct by Dennis Dutton. Is that his name?
Yes, Dennis Dutton. Yeah. It's an odd spelling of Dennis, D-E-N-I-S.
Right.
And then D-U-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-
about and how they apply to the kind of crisis that we're in today in culture and particularly in the realm of art, which many of us are aware of and we can't quite explain it, and these books help us to get a handle on it.
Yes, I spent probably a disproportionate amount of time talking about The Art Instinct by Dennis Dutton and not nearly as much time on The Eclipse of Art. They're both wonderful, and Spalding is great. These are guys, you know, who are very lively in their field, fully credentialed, and taking some considerable risk, because in effect they're basically simulating the role of the young child, the young innocent child who points at the emperor and opens the adult's eyes to the fact that there are no clothes. And this is truly amazing. I think it's indicative of the time, very, very open to the possibility that maybe we got it wrong, that postmodernism did not deliver the goods. I was just in New York not long ago, and I was also in Chicago, and I was at the Art Institute, which very recently opened its new wing. Think Xanadu. It is enormous. It's like a behemoth. It's outsizing the rest of the museum, and it muscles its way to a kind of position atop the heap, and it's a. I've gone three times, and each time I've gotten a little better, because I know the emergency route to the really good stuff for purposes of recovery. It seems as though we just utterly lost our way. This within maybe the last 30 to 40 years, certainly was within.
Let me just ask a question here. There are many people who would say that we started to lose our way at the turn of the 20th century, that many people at that time looked at Matisse and Picasso and said, you know, culture and art is going to hell in a handbasket, and we've got to save it.
Right.
Did things begin to go away, or is that, or these modern masters in your regard, and is there true art there?
Right. Damien Hirst's, the Enfant Terrible, from England, is a featured target of Julian Spalding's Eclipse of Art.
I'm quite sure that's true, even though I've not read it. I'm guessing where he's coming from and what he's taken stabs at.
Yeah,
and I agree.
And for purposes of clarification, I'm holding up an image of Damien Hirst Shark Tank or whatever it's called. Yeah, I know. You may want to have the children look away and move them far from the radio, because this is, you know, a desiccating, a rotting shark in a tank of formaldehyde or whatever. I'm not sure what
like
the
actual
shark. Mm. And then there's also the cow's head, which is being eaten by, consumed by maggots, mm. Which was bought by Saatchi, who is an advertising mogul, and being unthinkably wealthy and an advertising mogul, it was only a mouse click away from being a world-class collector of art. And so he has that the cow's rotting cow's skull in his or head in his collection. I forget what he paid for, but it was like a squillion, billion, hillion dollars, something more or less. And so the relationship of art to money is a study, is a whole theme unto itself. But because, Bill, you mentioned the possibility that all I'm doing is what has been the cycle of recoiling from the latest, from the newest, and that in the early part of the 20th century, there were those who regarded Matisse as a monster or just an inept fool, Picasso as well. It recalls for me the book by Thorsten Veblen, V-E-B-L-I-N, was written in 1899, called The Theory of the Leisure Class. I don't know how many of you are familiar with that, but it's an amazing and pertinent read. He is the gentleman who coined the phrase conspicuous consumption. Never mind the fact that we think it's a way of describing our present a lifestyle. It was written something of a satire, but is in fact profoundly edifying as to the motives for an evolving class, that there is something that needs to be exceedingly and conspicuously useless about our behavior and our artifacts for it to be powerful, for it to be indicative of power and vitality. If you were to say, look at some of the Rococo designs of ottomans and knickknacks and furniture, and you can sort of imagine part of the Baroque intricacy was to translate to the viewer a heck of a lot of time was, dare I say, squandered on these details, some of which you can't even see because they're underneath or in the back of. And so this is a fascinating topic, possibly beyond our scope presently, but it is where our culture perhaps gained a kind of odd foothold in signs or symptoms of vitality. And Spalding and Dutton and any number of others, including anthropologists, are looking at signs and signage and how it is that because of recent technology, we can forge and duplicate and simulate a kind of fraudulent parallel world of mere surface signs, veneer of reality. And This is enormously fascinating to someone who is in the field of producing imagery, particularly visual imagery. And Dutton looks hard at this, and there are strong indicators that this has Darwinian has fundamentally Darwinian implications. If you were to say, look at the male, if you were to look at the peacock, which is the male of the two, peahen, peacock, the fact that the peacock is able to register the beauty, the magnitude, the over the top plumage is an example he uses as illustrating the point of beauty of such incomparable density and detail that only the fittest possible peacock could have that ability to have a surplus energy to squander on an ornament. And this is enormously fascinating to me. Possibly it could be a subject of a later discussion. Because in lesser hands, that becomes the whole point. That becomes how a person might gain, you know, status by means of the simulated Rolex watch or its equivalent. And I think what Spalding is indicating is that this is what our culture is right now. Because of the technology, we can all be a kind of masquerade version of aristocratic and baronial significance.
So are you seeing in your own experience in having read these books and maybe other people or the, you know, general reviews or response to these books in the art world, is there a shift taking place as a result of these ideas coming out into the open? Like in your own relationship to your painting, having read these books,
is something
changing?
You would almost assume from the passion that I feel for some of this writing, but it really is best for me to back up and point out that the most essential thing for me is to, and for I recommend this, is to find a way to stop and take the time to just look what is there. And if you do this, if you can manage to habituate a life where you stop and take the time to look and see what is in front of you, there will be a life of such vitality that you don't really have the need or the urge to create a veneer to masquerade or simulate or duplicate, that the whole thing is just so vital and magical and really unnameable. And because, why? Because the level at which you're able to experience and perceive is precognitive meanings, which are very open-ended. They don't have the penalty of a kind of categorized meaning that is tested against a very rigid dialect of our culture, and so the payoff is immediate. Now there's an interesting word, immediate, because art, in a way, has an immediacy about it. Well, that could easily be corrupted as well by people saying, well, if I don't get it right away, then it must not be any good. What I would offer is that immediacy is a skill that you hone and cultivate after years of exposure which would include, on the one hand, a lot of looking, stopping, and taking the time to look, unassigned, pre-assigned, and reading, and talking, and discussing all of these possibilities, contentious and controversial possibilities, with the supposition that nobody really knows for sure. There's no right answer. It's enormous fun. It's recreational, it's therapeutic, it's fun. It's also somehow terribly serious.
Well, and I remember when in the cafe, seeing you do a little drawing of a coffee cup or, you know, the light on a glass or something. And then also one of your drawings that I was very intrigued by was a view from a parking lot of a museum, I think it was, you were in a sitting in a car somewhere, and you just like did this drawing of what you saw in this parking lot. And it was the kind of thing that, you know, if somebody had taken a snapshot of that same scene, it would have been rather unremarkable. But the drawing was very remarkable because the consciousness that you put into the seeing, the looking at that scene, and then brought, you know, into the drawing, something came alive when I looked at that drawing and made me love that parking lot.
And that's a very direct experience commentary, you know. And anybody can look at that and get that he's making a personal, direct commentary on his experience, and you can participate. And I think this, what you're describing, is bringing art down to earth. Now, artists today, I think, can get away with referring in the direction of something that's everyone, we're talking about the emperor's new clothes, you know. There is so much referring in the direction of something that we all, quote, agree on as significant, and yet it's just a kind of a surface illusion of significance. I'm trying to just restate what you are saying for the audience, and it's hard to sort through all of this. But I think that what you're talking about, because I haven't read these books, but I do know the situation that we're in today, is that we want to come back, bring ourselves back to earth, put our feet on the ground, and have our commentary be about our love and our direct experience, and then trying to give this to somebody else. And I personally believe that's what Matisse and Picasso were doing. And I see a huge difference between Damien Hirst and what's happening in this celebrity world of art today, in this fashion world, and this referring towards, we're all winking and saying yes, yes together about something that is like nothing below the surface. There's nothing down there, but we're all just sort of rubbing elbows and being all cool together. I think that's really what's going on, and I think that that was a voyage of discovery into a realm of deep poetic experience that Matisse and Picasso entered into. I don't want there to be any confusion that I raised the question, but I think there's a huge difference there between now and then. I also see that we're in a realm of this leisure class thing that you made up. I think we're in a realm where people are able to become obsessive about collecting anything. People will collect. I mean, I don't know. Somebody explained this phenomenon to me, but people are collecting almost everything. So there's hardly any like direct just living life, because we're too busy collecting artifacts of everything around us to put in these little collections and look back on and. Well, I don't know, turn around and sell them? Somebody explain this to me.
They hold them up to their friends who are also collecting, and they say, look at the size of my collection. And I've got this one, which nobody else has.
But see, I've got this one, which nobody else has, but the what it is seems to really not much
doesn't
matter.
Matter. Yeah, it doesn't matter. It's just my ingenuity as a collector that I was able to find it on eBay.
You see this going on with bottle caps and everything else and Barbie dolls and these toys that are being out. It's collectible today, you know. Yeah, there's 10 billion of them made, but they're collectibles, and you can start collecting.
Now,
I'm joking about that, but I think that the high-end art world is no better than that today.
A good point, and for purposes of clarification, I might indicate that it's not that I'm a reactionary. There's plenty of work being done that is rich and beautiful and extraordinary. And you can find it, you can even find it in museums and in brand new shiny wings like the Art Institute. But I would make this distinction and see if it doesn't apply to both instances, the hoarding, the rapacious hoarding, and also the early 20th century emergence of modernism, is the distinction that we could tease apart from new as the latest and new as original. When you look at it that way, they're almost opposites. And I think it was, I think it was like 1947. Christian Dior came out with some ad in the New York Herald or something. I only know this because it's in one of these books, I believe. And it was showcasing the latest, newest perfume or bauble or something, and it was brought up, and I mention it now because it illustrates the point as to the lesser meaning of the word new. That is merely the latest thing. That it lacked the new value of a Matisse as profoundly original, as excitingly novel. And I would say that what you have in a Damien Hirst or its equivalent is something that is predicated on, well, we haven't seen that before, it's the latest thing, but it's mostly, it's the latest thing. And maybe there's a good reason why we hadn't seen it before, and hopefully not see it again. But lastly, real quick, if I can, I don't know how much time we have, but All of these guys seem to be, and I joked with you, Bill, earlier, as my own private deputized posse that advocate what we're trying to do here in the little engine that could, the little icon that could, which is a kind of robust provincialism. And this is just not us being really silly. And though I am very pleased to suddenly get very silly, if everybody wants to, in any case, this new robust provincialism is tacitly encouraged in some of these passages. Indeed, the scene, the official scene, by which we mean New York mostly, is so rotted from the inside, is so tired, is so exhausted by its own duplicity that it's going to probably have to come from somewhere else. And if you look at the history of the internationalism, it is torn from the pages of fear and historical cataclysm. I mean, if you look at the international style of architecture, it came out of escape from Nazi Germany. And it had a kind of depersonalization. And much of that still is retained in an international style, in a global style. We maybe even feel it digitally, that there's something just not very, you know, buy fresh, buy local, buy provincial, is what I'm saying. Should we be running out of time? And I rather think that we could even use the technology in reverse to our benefit by availing it to a wider canopy of enthusiasts.
Right. Well, I think that rather than be provincial and disconnected, it's possible to be stepped out of where you can't see the forest for the trees in the middle of the New York art scene, step out and look at the bigger picture while still being globally connected, and we can ask the question globally, and we can have a global marketplace about this and discussion. So the digital will serve us that way.
Well, and but going back to the artists at the beginning of the 20th century too, a lot of them lived in Paris for a while and then went out in the boonies somewhere, you know, or like Matisse had made Cezanne. Big breakthroughs in Morocco, and Cezanne, you know, and then Picasso had houses down on the Riviera and all of that. So it's not without precedent in the history of art to have some smaller, rural, small-town setting give rise to something important.
The main thing is that we ask the question of where's the meat of the matter? it's become so big and so global and so wrapped up in money that much of the moves have to do with marketplace and making money, not unlike some of these things that happened in Wall Street mm-hmm. with the financial situation. The art world has become big money, and names and collections and stuff are put together to...
I will say real quick, because we hardly have any time. When I was doing the drawing, it was in St. Louis, and it was the Art Museum, and I was parked in a not quite legal place, and a guard came walking over, and he said, "I'm sorry, you're going to have to leave." And I showed him the drawing. He said, "You can stay. just go right
ahead." Yeah. So
we've been talking with Jim Weidel, by the way.
You've been listening to Icon Art Radio, a production of Iowa Contemporary Art, Fairfield.